Welcome to another edition of Fourth and One. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. I'm trying to bring the energy because I'm trying to snap Nick, who is a millennial, if you didn't know, out of
you make some bold assumptions.
His hypnotism with the old phone there.
You like to make some assumptions
about your screen addiction?
It's for football. Thanks. The doctor prescribes it. Okay.
Okay. I just checking. Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, what do you think of the last season of Game of Thrones?
I'll let you know whenever it's formally done, because as the taping of this podcast, I do not know what happened in the final.
I'm just saying, have you signed the petition saying you want it redone?
No.
No?
No. I will say,
you don't strike me as a joiner.
You are 100% right about that. If there's 500 people going one way, I'm like, oh, the other way looks better.
Yeah. Just be careful. There could be a dinosaur that way, and all the people are doing the right thing by running from it.
Well, they would be running faster than I would be concerned at that point. Okay. They would have a little bit more pep in their step if it were something like that.
And then there'd be you and my five-year-old running toward it. He would be trying to go pet it. He likes dinosaurs. What do you want me to do?
All right.
He's five. He doesn't know any better.
Okay. So I heard we had a Chiefs podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying. I'm just glad dinosaurs don't exist, because he would have already been eaten, and I would have lost a bet with my friends who didn't think I could keep a kid alive for 5 years.
I can't wait until your son is 18 years old and graduation day, and you want to know what an accomplishment today is? Listen to what your dad said on that Fourth and One podcast in 2019.
Would have never survived in caveman days.
All right.
Of course, we wouldn't have done this podcast either, and you would have nothing to listen to on your drive into work on Monday.
I don't listen to it because I'm referring to the
listeners, Nick.
But you're talking to me directly, Todd. It's so confusing.
So hard. So hard sometimes. I hope people understand the sacrifices I make.
Really? Wow. I just want you to know it's John Wick week.
It is.
So
do we have a time yet?
No, I haven't heard back from Tarek.
I didn't know if we had a time set up. All right. Because if we had one, I would invite all these fine folks to join us to go to see John Wick 3 in theaters.
I don't know if people want to hang out with us, though.
Probably not, but, you know.
I feel like Therese is going to be the big draw on that one.
Yeah. So, all right, well, it's going to be awkward if he's like, I thought this was a date night, and, like, you know, Ebbs is there, and then he makes us sit on the other side of the theater, one of those new ones that has the beds. I'm not sure I'm up for that.
No, we're going to a different theater that doesn't have those.
Oh, thank God. Oh, I thought this was going to get real awkward.
So, I heard...
You know what else is going to get real awkward? The Christmas card between Andy Reid and Bob Sutton, because I don't know if you're aware, Bob Sutton no longer with the Chiefs. No.
Yeah.
And now Steve Spagnuolo takes over. So, what do you say? Let's take a look at the defensive roster and see how you think it shapes up, Nick.
I was really confused. You did a little juke move right there. I was like, uh-oh.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
That's right. It was a little, well, we'll just move on.
Okay.
It's probably for the best. All right. Hey, let's start. Anytime I'm talking about defense, I always like to start up front. So I think I think that's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Because that your defensive line goes a long way in determining whether you're any good against the run or any good against the pass, or whether you have any strengths whatsoever on defense. Okay. And I know that there was a lot of concern, early in the offseason about this Chiefs defense, especially the defensive line when they traded away Dee Ford and then they cut Justin Houston, things like that. And, you know, and the big trade they'd made up to until, you know, as we got close to the draft was Emmanuel Ogba for Eric Murray, which I don't think really lit anybody on fire. But I got to imagine Frank Clark totally changes the dynamic of what you think about this defensive line group.
Correct, yeah. Frank Clark is going to be the leader of that. He's going to be the most athletic guy that they got in that front four outside of Chris Jones. And I think Frank is a more complete player overall and more disciplined. And I think he will help assist Chris Jones and some other people on that team and having the correct assignments with what they're going to do. And I mean, when you bring in a D-line coach like Brendan Daly, it's I mean, that's they're going to be. I'm really excited where this defensive line can go. Where with the attacking style that Chris Jones can do and Frank Clark, and then obviously you rotate in Emmanuel Ogbah, Breland Speaks, and Okafor off that left side. Possibly, I think those three are going to work it out at lefty end, and whoever can help rotate in. I know people are curious to see what Tano Passanio can do in this system.
I was going to say, what about K-Pass?
I am personally not very optimistic. I hope he shows up this year, but I always felt he was like a 3-4 year project when he got drafted. So we'll see what happens there. Defensive tackle wise, I think you have two really athletic guys in Chris Jones and Colin Saunders, and I think those two are going to be a strong rotation at the 3-tech spot. And I think Saunders, after Madreau, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, Henry Madreau, after he got released by the Chiefs, whenever I kind of had him as Jones' backup, I had a sneaky suspicion that Saunders was going to be the backup 3-tech behind Jones. And then 1-tech, you're probably going to have a variation of Derek Nottie, Xavier Williams, yep, and then Joey Ivey potentially.
Well, and what I love about, you know, I mean, people kind of question, I mean, when you look at the trade that they made to get a second-round pick next year with San Francisco 49ers for D Ford, and then they traded a first and a second to get Frank Clark. But when you talk about Frank Clark, you're talking about a much more complete player. You're talking about a guy who not only can rush the passer, is one of the elite pass rushers in the NFL, and by the way, has a much more substantial track record as a pass rusher than D Ford does. Mm-hmm. But you're also talking about a guy, and this is going to come up again when we talk secondary. You're also talking about a guy who's a tone setter. You're talking mm-hmm. about a guy who not only is going to be physical and against the run and do some things that D Ford just couldn't or wouldn't do, you know, from that defensive end spot. But you're also talking about a guy who's going to make sure that if Chris Jones decides to freelance and wants to, you know, keep his sack record alive or something like that, there's someone that's going to make sure that those guys are held accountable for that and are going to know that, look, that's not the way we do things here. And I think that that was as important as anything else. They've remade this defense top down with a new scheme, a new coaching staff and all that. But I think they've also brought in a new attitude, and you're going to see that reflected mostly in Frank Clark and Tyrann Mathieu, who were the big acquisitions via trade and free agency for this defense during the offseason.
Correct. You're going to have some tempo setters now that you were hoping to get in Justin Houston and Eric Berry and Marcus Peters and some of those guys before that are have since departed.
And these are guys who, you know, and obviously we haven't seen them in practice yet, but, you know, the history of these players is that those guys are tempo setters on the practice field and not just on game day, that they really kind of force guys to buy in and you know, kind of bring the defense together. And I think this defense, as much as anything, needed something like that.
Yeah, this defense has needed this for quite some time. It needed it from some of the defensive coaches. It needed it from their defensive coordinator. It needed it from some of the players on the overall defensive roster. And I think finally they have that for the first time in a while. I think Tomba did his best when he was here, and Derek Johnson did his best when he was here. But whenever you saw a lot of and Mike DeVito, I think he was a very good tempo setter as well. But I think now you're going with a new youthful wave that can help mold this defense for years to come.
And then, of course, the big thing I think to watch, the other big thing I think to watch as this offseason progresses, as we get closer to the season, is are they going to pay Chris Jones his money? Because they should.
I think, well, obviously it had been reported that Chris Jones had not attended yet.
Yeah, has he been sitting out offseason?
So we'll see what happens with OTAs. I'm guessing, this is just a guess on my part, normally when players are in that contract year, they like to not show up until mandatory minicamp mm-hmm. when it's required so they don't have any penalties for missing.
Which will be next month.
Correct. So I'm not going to be surprised if I don't see him till then. If you do before then, that's great. But, I mean, from his perspective, you want to avoid injury, but you want to stay in condition. And he's doing a good job posting on Instagram of him staying in condition. So I'm personally not worried about him being out of shape or anything.
It will be interesting to see, though, if he shows up to OTAs this week. Because I think you've always been critical of guys who don't do that. And obviously, contract year is a little bit different animal when a guy's looking for that first payday. You know, because this is really the first time Chris Jones has a chance to get life-changing, generational-changing money for his family. So a little bit different situation than maybe Eric Berry and Jamal and Justin Houston, who had already gotten that big contract and then weren't showing up and doing the things you'd hope you would see from the guys getting that kind of money, right?
Correct.
Man of many words, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, I'm staying on time.
That's tonight. Little Nicky Jacobs.
I told you, you were never allowed to call me that.
I didn't call you what? I don't even know what we're talking about. Hey, let's move on and talk about linebackers. Are you a linebacker guy?
I didn't play a linebacker.
No, but I'm just saying, are you a linebacker guy? Are you like have a lot of love for like the Ditt Butkuses and those type of guys?
I enjoy football in general, yes.
That's it?
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe
I'm telling you, man, we're already at 6 minutes on this.
Why? I thought maybe you had more thoughts on it. Look, linebacker's an interesting position because I don't even think – I think that you and I don't even agree on what position Anthony Hitchens is going to play this year. You know, much, you know, and I don't think there's a consensus on whether this group is any good yet. I mean, what do you think? Because I personally, I think Anthony Hitchens played very, very well as a middle linebacker in Dallas, and they signed him to a big money deal. They tried to move him outside. Outside in a different, you know, scheme. He was terrible last year. Just terrible. There's no way around it. Anthony Hitchens had a very disappointing season, I think. But I think if you move him back to the middle, where he was most comfortable and where he was productive in Dallas, I think that makes sense, especially because I'm not convinced that Reggie Ragland can do the things required of the position, especially from a coverage standpoint and some of the things that you'd like to see him do athletically, getting sideline to sideline in this defense. But I know you think he's more of a strong, right?
Who?
Anthony Hitchens.
No.
Oh, you've changed your position then.
I'd never had that position. I see him more as a middle linebacker, a Mike linebacker. And I know they have him as a will, but I think he's a Mike linebacker for him.
What? We've talked before. You said you thought he'd be at the strong side.
Go for two, Todd.
No, I'll check. I'll go back and look because I know you've said strong side.
Okay.
Because we've talked about this at length before.
Okay.
So then you do think that he's the middle linebacker.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you've said for several months that you thought that Reggie was going to get the first crack at middle linebacker.
Correct. I think Reggie will get the first crack because I think that's what the organization wants to do to prove if he can or can't be that guy, even though he can't cover and hasn't illustrated the ability to, which is why Buffalo got rid of him to begin with and traded him to the Chiefs. So, and the way, from my understanding, from what's been reported, is that they want to put Hitchens at will to start out. They want to put Ragland at Mike to begin with. And then it's strong. They want to put Wilson there. So apparently that's what's been reported that they have in mind right now for their starting three. Is that the starting three that I think
that's a terrible linebacker group.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens when September rolls around, where I think it'll change. But that's what's been reported to this point.
So where do you think Darren Lee fits in? Because obviously when Adam Gase, kind of made his power play and became the GM there for the New York Jets. He waited, 12 hours to trade Darren Lee for basically a conditional pick. Darren Lee, a guy, number 20 overall pick a couple years ago out of Ohio State. Where do you see him fitting in, and does that in any way change your opinion about what this linebacker group is?
Well, I mean, I was kind of curious if they were maybe going to – what they saw in him, if they saw him as a Sam backer or if they saw him as a Will backer. It sounds like they're interested in using him in Will and sub packages and coverage. So at that point, if you're going to do that, then I would think you'd want to move Hitchens to middle backer and have Dorian O'Daniel and Deron Lee be your Will linebackers. So, I mean, we'll see what
they
end up doing.
You think O'Daniel fits more maybe in – I mean, Darren Lee's a pretty good coverage guy too, though, but maybe not quite as fast as a Dorian O'Daniel?
Well, I could see both of them being the linebackers and sub packages.
Yeah.
I think those could be the two covers, linebackers and sub.
I mean, I think the Darren Lee thing, I think that probably spells the end of Reggie Ragland's time, because I think you're going to end up having Hitchens and Ben Neiman probably at that middle linebacker spot.
More than likely.
And then, you know, like you talked about with the Will, O'Daniel, Darren Lee. And I just don't see Ragland as a fit on the strong side over there. I think you're going to end up going with, I just don't know where Reggie Ragland fits on this roster anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're going to give him every chance possible, but at the end of the day, I think he's the seventh linebacker on this team.
Well, and you got to remember, you've got you know, you've got Raymond Davidson, who, you know, people, you know, I know you liked a lot last year. You know, and then they brought in guys like Darius Harris out of Middle Tennessee State, Gary Johnson out of Texas, you know, as undrafted rookies that I think could compete for a spot. And those guys, I think, have much more special teams value than a guy like Reggie Ragland. So I just, if Ragland isn't a starter, I don't think he makes the roster.
And I think that's something that will become more of a reality that we'll enter into late August, early September.
All right, so secondary wise, this has got to be the spot where you have the most concern, right? At the cornerback spot, when you look at this roster, or am I putting words in your mouth?
Yeah, no, cornerback. I still want to see another starting corner that could potentially be opposite of Breland and there with Fuller that could compete with Ward. So, I mean, we'll see what happens over the next handful of months if they can add or create an addition to that spot.
So, Bashaud Breland, who they signed this offseason, I think he's a good player. I think Kendall Fuller is a good player. I liked what I saw from Tre'Varius Ward, but I'm not ready to say that he's a starting caliber cornerback in this league. Are there any of these rookies, whether it's Rashad Fenton, who they drafted, or some of the guys they brought in, that you think can you know, potentially be this year's Tre'Varius Ward, the guy that kind of steps in and fills a big-time need, if not right away, down the stretch, you know, as the games become more and more important?
I don't know about on the outside, but on the inside, I'm curious about the undrafted free agent Mark Fields that they got from Clemson. I think he could be a number four corner for him and work in that in the nickel spot. So that's a guy that I'm really, really curious to see what he's able to do.
The other guy I kind of want to see is Keith Reeser, because he's a guy who had some injury troubles, I think had a roster spot with the Chiefs until he got hurt. And then he's, you know, went to the now defunct, minor league, so to speak, the AAF, shined, re-signed with the Chiefs. He's a guy that, you know, I think he's the guy that can challenge Tre'Varius Ward and push him for that other outside corner spot sometime in training camp. Maybe it ends up being Reeser and Breland unless they add somebody June 1. But that's, if they're going to add anybody June 1 cut or after June 1, that you're hoping it's a corner, right?
Corner or receiver. Those are the two spots.
Maybe tight end.
And one of those three.
Yeah. What about safety-wise? I mean, I feel like with Tyrann Mathieu, with Jordan Lucas, with Armani Watts.
Juan Thornhill.
Yeah, with Juan Thornhill, the second-round pick. I feel a lot better about the safety group than I did last year. And the other thing is, hopefully we won't have to hear day-to-day for 14 weeks.
I hope that I think that may be done, and I think Tyrann Mathieu and Juan Thornhill, they have it in their spirit to play, so...
I mean, you and I, we've talked about this before, but Juan's probably the guy who makes the biggest impact among the defensive rookies, right?
Yeah, among the rookies that they draft, I think he's going to be the impact for day one in terms of range, speed, athletic ability. I'm not saying he's going to be flawless by any means, but I think he's the guy that you can put on the field probably from day one and have him significantly contribute.
Do you see a spot on this roster for Daniel Sorensen?
Maybe down in the box that they feel comfortable with him, but I think from an athletic perspective, I think it's not going to be the easiest road for him to make the roster.
Could he be a guy you use in sub packages too, kind of like we talked about with a Darren Lee or with a Dorian O'Daniel? I mean, he's more of almost that mold anyway, isn't he?
He is, but with them bringing in as many players as they have, that's really starting to kind of push him out of the way potentially.
All right. Any other thoughts on the defensive roster?
Nope.
Well, there you go. We exhausted Nick Jacobs.
No, I got a time we got to stay on.
All right. Hey, we'll be back after this break. And we have to talk about the most important part of the team on the other side.
We know Kansas City.
We love telling the stories of Kansas City.
An officer recognized something while they were out on a call.
And we couldn't do it without our reporters on the streets.
This has been such a hot button issue.
Disaster averted in this case.
We hustle. We dig.
We bring you the important stories you won't see anywhere else.
You were part of the team that helped land a rover on Mars.
There is a difference in the morning. Watch us and you'll see.
41 Action News, clear, complete coverage.
Save KC.
Stories of hope.
Individually, none of us have got the resources to combat this, but together we do.
Stories of change.
Statistics do show that when you build strong community and strong neighborhoods, you reduce violence.
Stories you won't see anywhere else, like this one.
There is so much hurt, and these people don't think about that.
Showcasing the people, working together as one to better our community.
There's strength in numbers.
And change lives.
We want them to know they're not alone.
Save KC, only on 41 Action News and KSHB.com.
41 Action Sports with Mick Schaefer. Clear, complete coverage.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, I feel like this is the most important yet not talked about part of the roster.
I wonder why.
Special teams. I mean, what do you think of the special teams roster here? Are you okay with James Winchester at long snapper?
I'm fine with Winchester. I'm fine with Harrison Butker. I am. I wanna make you scared and say if I were you, I'd be a little concerned about
this, Jack Fox at a rice.
About Jack Fox taking your buddy Dustin Colquitt.
Priority free agent signing.
Yeah, better watch out.
So I mean, what I will say is he would have to have a darned fine camp to supplant the greatest punter in NFL history.
What I would honestly do if I'm the organization, I'd let him do a whole bunch of punts so you can kind of keep Dustin's leg fresh for whenever it actually matters.
Yeah. No, and I think for Jack Fox, this is a great opportunity to learn from a guy who's been doing it for a long time. You know, he didn't get drafted, so you kind of could handpick your spot.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what better way than to go learn from Dave Tobe, learn under Dustin Colquitt, and then, you know, see where that takes you. And maybe he'll get a chance like a Harrison Butker did, you know, when Cairo Santos got hurt, or if some other team doesn't like him, maybe he can impress enough that Jack Fox gets a job somewhere else, assuming that they don't go for a money-saving move there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, salary cap implications and all, I don't think they do that to my boy Dustin.
I hope not, because I don't know if anybody would be able to console you afterwards.
Fair point. You know, speaking of former Chiefs, you know, one man quit his job this week, and I know that he was probably your favorite general manager of all time, Scott Pioli.
Mm-hmm.
How far above every other general manager in Chiefs history do you hold Pioli in your esteem, sir?
Pioli was, in terms of the four that I've actually got to interact with and chat with before, he's definitely not very high on that list, and I won't miss him anytime soon.
Call me Scott. Mr. Pioli's my dad is not one of your favorites.
he's not, we're not besties. We don't exchange Christmas cards.
Oh, no.
Cause I actually enjoyed, after Carl got out of the Chiefs organization, I actually enjoyed getting to have some conversations with him and his thoughts on it.
Yeah.
And then Dorsey was Dorsey. He was just one of those guys. He just loved to have fun with people and, you know, and just watch football. And in a lot of ways, I mean, he was an entertaining guy. He'd always like to come up to the media tent, and he'd like to sit there behind all the beat writers to see if any of them would notice that the general manager of the Chiefs is sitting behind him watching practice with him. And then he'd always look around and tell people to shh, because he was going to sneak up on him like a, you know, a Navy SEAL.
So safe to say, if you had to pick one to go to dinner with, it would be Dorsey over Pioli?
If it's between those two, oh yeah, Dorsey by a landslide, okay. Man. Dorsey would actually, you'd have a lot of fun with him out and about.
It almost struck me as Pioli was like trying to make sure he was a free agent, because it came like right after the Jets made their move, and I'm like, I don't know.
In all honesty, what Pioli needs to do, and I'm going to be 100% honest here in a way that I haven't been. Whenever he went down to Atlanta, I was like, man, I would not feel comfortable if I was anybody in that organization with him there. And he was there for almost 5 years, I think. And so for him to be there that long, I think he was hoping that somebody would give him a shot and forget about what happened in Kansas City. And clearly nobody forgot. And then everybody saw what happened with the Chiefs when Andy and Dorsey and then at this point Veach have all taking over the roster. And so what Pioli's going to have to do is he's going to have to go in the media, whether it's ESPN, NFL Network, and he's really going to have to – and I wouldn't be surprised if he got with Peter King and they somehow got him at NBC Sports or something like that. So I know him and Peter King were pretty close in the past.
You know, but ESPN's going to replace Lewis Riddick with him.
But I think that he needs to rehab his image on a daily basis and be out in front of the media, a member of the media, and talking on a daily basis to where people get his thoughts and they have him on record and that type of stuff. But also, he's ever present in front of the camera.
The other option, I think, and it'd be interesting to see whether it happened. It seems like a lot of times when those New England guys fly the coop, and then they fall flat on their face, they go skulking back to New England. So, I feel like he nuked those bridges on the way out.
I would be insanely surprised if he got another shot.
But I feel like that's the only other option he has. So
I don't think that option's there, and I won't get into the stories of why. I just don't think that option's there. I think that boat sailed.
Let the record,
Kansas City.
Let the record show. I tried to bait Nick into going down that road. He declined.
No.
So Nick, Jamal Charles, Derek Johnson, and then I'm sure the one that got you most misty was seeing Dwayne Bowe catch a touchdown after his 1-day contract. Here's the funny thing.
No.
Were you like me? I was like he wasn't already retired? Like, he hasn't played in the league in like 3 years. I just assumed he was already retired.
His last stop was Cleveland.
Cleveland, and he played what? Six quarters there? I don't even know. I think he's appeared in like 5 games or something.
He had it dropped off pretty quick there after 2014.
Yeah, I know. I mean, 2015.
Athletically, he was done in 2014.
Like, he literally didn't play in 2016, 17, or 18. I just assumed he had retired long, long ago. I had no idea. Like, why was he not collecting his pension the last 3 years? Like,
no, he might have been. I don't know. I don't get to look at the pay stubs.
That's true, but I guess I assumed that this 1-day contract meant that he had formally retired. So, who do you think? I mean, Mark Boerichter, who's the next one they bring back for a 1-day contract this week? I would love to see Mark Boerichter come back on a 1-day contract.
I don't know.
Did he go anywhere else after the Chiefs?
I don't know.
All right. Ricky Stanzi, maybe?
I apologize to Mark if he's listening.
Ricky Stanzi, maybe? I don't know. Yeah. Who do you want to see come back on a 1-day contract next?
I'm not worried about that right now. I haven't given a lot of thought to it.
All right. Well, gun to your head. Do you retire Justin Houston or Eric Berry's number?
Neither of them. Oh, yeah. Todd, I knew Todd would want to bring that after you saw the Twitter mentions this week that I had on that one.
Talking about, did somebody
stop? Did you know? You know, some fans were very upset that I didn't think 29 should be retired.
Yeah, well, so the floor is yours, Nick. You know, look, he's a guy I know that especially everybody loves Eric Berry because it's a great story, and there were two or three seasons where Eric Berry was arguably the best safety in the league.
Don't say that either, because then they want to mention the 5 Pro Bowls and the 3 All Pros.
There were two or three seasons where Eric Berry was one of the best safeties in the league.
If you say that like I did, then that's what they come.
There
back
were a few
with.
Other years where his reputation may have carried him to a
they
Pro Bowl. Okay, well,
no,
this is my opinion.
I know
you're welcome to have your opinion. You're welcome to be wrong about it. I'm just telling you.
I'm just gonna stay back from the mic.
But I'm just saying, like. I mean, look, he was injured a lot. I understand there's the emotional attachment that he's a cancer survivor. I love the Eric Berry story. I'm a big Eric Berry fan. But, you know, and look, I guess the Chiefs have a history. There are some guys who didn't have, you know, who were shooting stars, so to speak, in the Ring of Honor that just had a great peak, stuff like that, you know, and are up there. But why, I mean, you really don't think that either one of those guys should be in there. You know, why is that?
I don't think their number should be retired. I think Houston
should they be in the Ring of Honor, because they no longer retire those numbers, right?
What,
when they put them in the Ring of Honor, they don't necessarily retire that number anymore. Do they belong in the Ring of Honor?
I think Justin has a good shot, and I could see Barry getting that chance in the Ring of Honor. It's just I don't think their numbers should be retired, either one of them.
Chiefs Hall of Famers.
I think you could put him in the Chiefs Hall of Fame. I will be surprised if either got in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I don't think that'll be happening.
No, they didn't have the longevity. They didn't have the sustained numbers. You know,
I think Jamal Charles has a good shot to go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame and be in the Chiefs Hall of Fame just because of what he was able.
Jamal
to do.
Jamal absolutely will be in the Chiefs Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
so will Derek Johnson.
But
I don't think Derek Johnson will be in Canton.
I wouldn't even retire Jamal Charles' number.
No.
But I think he was one of the best Chiefs I ever watched.
No, I wouldn't retire any of those numbers. I would retire number 15. Are you ready to retire number 15?
Not yet, but if he can put 10 to 15 years like that together, then of course.
Can we agree that the next number to be retired is 2?
I know you're going to make that case for quite some time, but it's got a unique thing that people rarely bring up, the other infamous person that wore number 2.
I'm listening.
Colts playoff game.
I'm listening.
Couple missed field goals. I'm just surprised that, you know, I'm surprised, man, that people don't.
Are you referring to Lynn Elliott?
I mean, yes, I am.
All right, yep. Just checking. So
glad you cleared that up for everybody.
All right, I just wanted to make sure if anybody's new to the podcast that they know 2 things. 1, I'm not scared to say Lynn Elliott. And 2,
in all fairness, you're not scared to say a lot of things.
Fair point. Hey, we got one more segment. You still have time, or do I need to let you go?
We have to make it quick, but yeah, we got
time. All right, we'll talk to you kids on this side of this break then.
We're here.
Welcome to 41 Action News Today.
When the sun dawns on a new day.
All right.
When one shift ends and another begins.
Some big changes are heading our way.
We're here for the ones who hit the ground running. The ones whose shifts never end. Because at 4:30 a.m., before the clouds and traffic roll in, we're here to prepare you as your day just begins. 41 Action News Today. Clear, complete coverage. 41 Action Sports with Mick Schaefer. Clear, complete coverage.
Cutting the cable cord? 41 Action News is now on Roku. Search KSHB. Add our channel and you're set. All of our newscasts stream live. No other station in Kansas City can say that. Get clear, complete coverage on 41 Action News now on Roku.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, we started in the great tradition of 4th and 1.
less than a year that it's been around.
I think the people have really
been passed down from generations and generations.
That's right. Do you remember where you were when you first heard a 4th and 1 podcast?
Yeah, I was sitting here in the studio.
Yeah, when, you know, and you've, I'm sure, like, you know, played the first one back for your grandchildren.
I haven't even met a wife yet, let alone children or grandchildren. Right,
well, you know. I don't know what high school Nick was like.
I don't even have a pet. I don't even have that yet.
So what? Well, but I mean, anybody
I'm like,
who's
I'm like Matthew McConaughey in Failure to Launch right now. All right. Like,
that was a different movie.
No, I know.
Never mind. We'll stop right there.
Yeah,
I do like me some Waterson. But anybody who's been a fan of this show for at least a week. knows how awesome our Name the Chiefs segment is. So let's play again. Let's go. Come on. You go first this time.
All right. Name that chief, Todd. This player was a defensive back
for Lloyd Burris.
Wait for the other clue. He was drafted in the second round in 1986.
Daron Cherry.
Todd, okay. You got to wait for the first right. 4, okay? And you're going to have to answer like Jeopardy. No, okay. He played for 4 NFL teams. He's won 2 Super Bowls, obviously not with the Chiefs, because I knew you were going to ask that. And he was a first-team All-Pro in 1989. He played for the Chiefs from 1994 to 1996.
Wait, can you, 94 to 96?
94 to 96. Can you name that chief?
Oh, so he
chief?
Wasn't drafted by the Chiefs. Oh.
You just ruined my line.
Sorry.
Can you name that chief?
Well, I've been sitting here trying to think of guys they drafted. 94.
Well, he wasn't necessarily drafted by the team because he won 2 Super Bowls with another team.
James Hastie is the person coming to mind.
James Hastie, I don't remember winning Super Bowls.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, but he's the first one that came to mind. I'm trying to think of that era. I'm thinking of Marty Schottenheimer bending over, kissing people in the end zone.
He is from that era. Todd, can you name that chief?
Well, I'm all thrown off because the whole time I was trying to think of like guys that were drafted in 86.
All right, you want me to help you?
Yeah.
I'll give you the teams that he played for.
Okay.
The Chiefs.
Thanks, I got that one.
The Seahawks. The Packers. And the Giants.
So he probably won one with the Giants.
It is certainly possible. He still lives in the area and has four kids. One of his sons plays, I believe, at South Dakota right now. And another one, I believe, is that... Well, I'm not going to say the other one. They'll give it away.
What?
No. I've given you way more clues than you need.
I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, I'm sorry, Todd. The correct answer was Mark Collins.
Yeah, you know what? If you'd have said he waved the green flag at the Digital Ally 400 last week at Kansas Speedway, I totally would have nailed it.
How could I forget that part of the trivia question about a football player? Yeah, Mark Collins won. He won two Super Bowls with the Giants.
Did you see he was a Pro Bowler though, or an All-Pro?
He was an All-Pro.
I didn't realize he was ever an All-Pro.
Mark, I apologize for Todd's comment.
Yeah, no, I mean,
his son's actually doing really well as a cornerback up there, I believe, in South Dakota. Or something.
Yeah, no, I'm impressed. I just
and
didn't realize
he actually had like seven scouts up there a while back at one of their.
I didn't realize he was an All-Pro.
Yeah, right. Dude, both his sons, man, they're both good cornerbacks. Like their dad.
We'll have to start watching tape on him. All right, well, here you go. You ready for mine?
Oh, don't worry. I've already watched tape.
Of course you have. You're depraved. All right, here we go. You ready for this?
Yeah, and I already know where this is going to go. I'm not even looking forward to it. I'm going to guess wrong. I already know the answer. I'm guessing. It's not even going to be right.
I always tell him that I'm going to pick like a guy who was in training camp, never appeared in a game, was a backup offensive lineman in 1965. It's not entirely true.
Yeah.
This Chiefs Hall of Famer was the number 114 overall pick in the 1980 NFL draft.
1980.
I'm not going to tell you if he was drafted by the Chiefs or not.
I don't care.
He finished a 10-year career in Kansas City with 353 receptions for 6,372 yards, including three 1,000-yard seasons with 33 touchdowns. He ranks in the franchise top 10 in all three of those categories. His AFC best 1,351 receiving yards in 1983 stood as the Chiefs' record for more than 17 years before Derek Alexander broke it in 2000. This fifth-round pick from LSU is also in the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame, and this is going to give it away.
No, I already got my name in my head.
Well, okay.
Do you just want me to say it already?
Yeah.
And then you can still do your trivia question after. I'm going to go with Carlos Carson.
It is. I was going to say, and he wore the same number as Tony Gonzalez.
That wouldn't have given away for me.
You didn't know he was 88?
I wouldn't remember.
That's why Tony should have never got to wear that number, because they should have retired Carlos Carson.
I want to say J.J. Burton wore 88, too.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he did.
Joe Horn was 87.
Willie Davis was 84. Tim Barnett was 82.
Yeah.
Keith Cash was 89. See, I remember a lot of numbers.
What was Ted Popson?
48. You didn't think I'd know that either, did you?
Well, who can forget the image of him dying on the sideline in the 1997 AFC Divisional Playoff game?
That's hurtful.
Wow.
So.
It is Carlos Carson.
All right. I
2017
actually,
Chiefs Hall of Fame.
Which
clue gave it to you? The number 114 overall pick in 1980 NFL draft?
Whenever you gave me the time frame and receptions, I knew that's who that was at that point.
Well, in fairness, I did go Stephon Page last week.
Who
is Stephon Page and Carlos Carson and Paul Palmer were my favorite players growing up.
Who is Carlos Carson?
We don't accept. we don't accept.
All right, you ready for questions? Check the tweets?
Yeah, let's do it. I almost forgot.
Oh, my goodness, Todd. How could you forget your one shining moment each and every week?
Probably because I'm drunk.
Todd is kidding. I've been around him all day. He is just joking for anybody listening. And you say...
Especially Scott Winkler.
Scott's going to be a household name because of you. <I know. laughs> People are going to be like, you're the Scott Winkler? Like,
what are you?
The Scott Winkler?
What?
All because of you. He's going to get all these LinkedIn requests because of you. He's a celebrity now.
We'll put it out on the tweets later.
Again, Todd is completely sober. He just had a Diet Pepsi a little while ago. Sorry. That's my bad. And I forgot you only drink Dr. Pepper. All right. First one's going to be from Andrew. Scale of 1 to 10. How are you feeling
11.
About the linebacking corp?
Crank it up to 11. Six. A six. I mean, honestly, I think Anthony Hitchens can go back to middle and play well. I I think Darren Lee and Dorian O'Daniel can be good at the weak side. I mean, Damian Wilson is a strong side linebacker. I don't know. I mean, none of those guys blow my hair back. So a six, I mean, I feel better. Honestly, it probably would have been a 4 or 5 before they got Darren Lee, but I think that really improved the depth.
Okay. Next question is going to be from Alvin.
Does he have brothers named Simon and Theodore?
I've not asked him, but you can ask him later.
All right.
He says, penalties. Will the O-line potentially have less penalties in the second year with Mahomes because of the continuity / comfort? Will the defense be less penalized with a new DC, but hopefully more technique sound?
Well, they couldn't be less technique sound defensively. So, I mean, I think the defense will be better overall because I think anytime you have a change like that, it gets people's attention. The guys that have been there, it gets their attention. The guys that are new to the locker room want to prove something. I think the defense will be a lot more disciplined this year. Offensive line, I mean, look, I don't think Mitch Morse is gone. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif missed a lot of time last year. I don't know that they have as much continuity as maybe you think they did coming in. Jordan Devey, I know he only played a couple games. He's gone. Don't know what they're going to do with Andrew Wiley in there. I mean, I think that the offensive line is still going to be the Chiefs' offensive line.
Our next question comes from Rod. Do you feel like the longer this thing with Hill goes on without any news, the more likely he is to play for the Chiefs this year?
Yes.
Seems like something is holding the organization back from letting him go.
Well, I mean, what's holding them back is that he's a unique talent. I mean, he's you know, you can't just go get Tyreek Hill off the wide receiver tree, to paraphrase Ned Yost. He's got a unique set of skills that you just can't replicate in one player. And when you look at what the NFL allowed to happen with Kareem Hunt by not keeping him on the commissioner's exempt list, you know, and making it so that another team couldn't sign him, you know, you let another guy who is another unique player with his combination of speed and power and the things he could do catching the ball out of the backfield. And you basically let the Chiefs doing the right thing by cutting a player turn into a huge benefit, because the Cleveland now gets an all-pro caliber running back who very well may have led the league in rushing his first 2 years. He did his first year, may have been on track to do it a second year for nothing. They got him for nothing on a sweetheart deal. And I know that it could all blow up in Cleveland's face, but if you're the Chiefs, boy, you got to be a little bit more careful, you know. And I think there's just so much that we don't know about that situation that still has to sort itself out. But yeah, I think the longer this goes, I do think the more likely that Tyreek Hill ends up being suspended for 2, 4, 6, 8 games, whatever random number Goodell lands on. I'm convinced that he like spins a wheel and throws a dart. Whatever that dart hits, Tyreek may be suspended. But then, I think. The chances are increasing that he'll be on the Chiefs roster next year, for better or worse.
Well, Todd, I am sorry we are out of time now.
No. Do you think he'll be on the Chiefs roster next year?
Who? Tyreek?
Tyreek.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Until all the facts come out, I have no idea at this point.
The fact that this continues to, you know, I mean, we're almost, you know, we're into mid-May. We're into the back half of May. This has been going on for more than 2 months now. Do you think that that's a sign that it's more likely?
And here's what I'm going to say, and I've stuck to it, and I'm going to keep sticking to it, is until I know every single thing fact-wise and it's made public, I don't know. Because all it's going to take is one thing that can show one way or another and sways it, and then you're just going to have to go down that road at that point. So I don't know, and I'm not going to know until it comes out there. So
I think the fact that the Chiefs haven't cut him yet means they're maybe looking for a way to keep him. So
we'll see what happens.
So anyway, guys, we will be back to talk about Chiefs OTAs because they're going to actually get on the field, and we'll get to see a little bit of what this team's going to look like in 2019. And we will check you on, I guess, Memorial Day. Right? There we go.
Yeah.
Say goodbye, Nick.
Goodbye, Todd. And go. And we're going to go see John Wick, okay. Hopefully. Huh?
Do we need to have a review of that next week?
Probably not. We can talk about how it is.
I'll take notes.